George's bulk settling on the cushions beside her.
"Smells good," George said.
She took the lid off a platter of fish fillets and vegetables.
"Looks good, too," George added.
"You're hungry," she said.
"Haven't eaten since breakfast. Help yourself."
George didn't wait to be coaxed. He lifted off his face mask again and dug in. Cardenas watched as fork and knife moved seemingly by themselves, and chunks of dinner rose to his face, which seemed to be floating in midair. She found that if she looked hard enough directly at him, she could see a faint flickering glitter, almost subliminal. Reflection off the ceiling lights, scattered by the chips, she thought. But you have to know he's there to see it, and even then it's almost below the perception level.
"Don't you want any?" George asked.
"No, you go ahead."
"Eat the veggies, at least."
"I'll take the salad."
The meal was finished in a few minutes. George put his mask on again and completely disappeared.
"You tell them you're finished, or do they send a maid back for the tray automatically?"
"I tell the guard he sends for the maid."
"Okay. Tell the guard you're finished, and ask him to type the tray."
"He'll send for the maid."
"Tell him you don't want to wait for her. Make some excuse."
Cardenas nodded, got up from the sofa, and went to the door. She could sense George's body warmth as he padded along beside her. She banged on the door with the flat of her hand.
"I'm finished. Could you please take the tray?"
"I'll call the kitchen," came the guard's muffled voice.
"I can't wait. I've got to get to the toilet right away. I'm sick to my stomach. Please take the tray."
A moment's hesitation, then they heard the lock click. The door swung open and the guard stepped in, looking concerned.
"What's the matter? Something in the..."
The punch sounded like a melon hitting the pavement from a considerable height. The guard's head snapped back and his eyes rolled up. He crumpled to the floor. Cardenas saw his arms yanked up into the air and his body dragged into the room.
"Come on now,"
George whispered to her.
They stepped out into the hallway. The door shut, seemingly by itself, and locked. She felt his hand engulf half her upper arm as George led her down the hallway to the stairs. The house seemed quiet at this hour, although a glance out the windows showed that the cavern outside was still lit in daytime mode. The downstairs hall was empty, although Cardenas could hear the sounds of conversation floating through from somewhere. Neither of the voices sounded like Humphrey's to her. They got to the foyer just inside the front door. Two young men in gray suits looked surprised to see her approaching them. Frowning, the taller of the two said,
"Dr. Cardenas, what are..."
George's punch spun him completely around. The other guard stared, frozen with surprise, until he was lifted off his feet by a blow to the midsection. Cardenas heard a bone-snapping crunch, and the guard fell limply to the tiled floor. The front door jerked open, and George hissed,
"Come on, then!"
Cardenas ran out of the house, up the path that wound through the garden and through the hatch that opened into Cellini's bottommost corridor. She could hear George panting and puffing alongside her. Once they were through the hatch, George's hand on her arm brought her to a stop.
"I don't think anybody's following us," he said.
"How long do you think it will take for them to realize I'm gone?" she asked. She sensed him shrugging.
"Not fucking long."
"What now, then?"
"Let me get out of this suit," George muttered. "Hot enough inside here to cook a fella."
His face appeared, then his entire shaggy head. Within a minute, he stood before her, sweating and grinning, a big red-haired mountain of a man in rumpled, stained, olive-green coveralls.
"That's better," George said, taking a deep breath. "Could hardly breathe inside that suit."
As they started walking swiftly along the corridor toward the escalator, Cardenas asked,
"Where can I go? Where will I be safe? Humphreys will turn Cellini upside down looking for me."
"We could go to Stavanger and ask him to take care of you."
She shook her head.
"Don't put Doug in the middle of this. Besides, Humphreys probably has his own people planted in Cellini's staff."
"Oh, yeah.
Maybe,"
George said as they reached the escalator.
"Inside Astro, too, for that matter."
Suddenly frightened at the possibilities, Cardenas blurted,
"Where can I go?"
George smiled.
"I got the perfect hideout for you. Long as you don't mind sharing it with a corpsicle, that is."
Bonanza.
"It's a beauty," Dan breathed, staring at the image on the control panel's radar screen. "Pretty ugly-looking beauty," Poncho countered. The radar image showed an elongated, irregular lump of an asteroid, one end rounded and pitted, the other dented by what looked like the imprint of a giant mailed fist. "It looks rather like a potato," said Amanda. "Don't you think?" "An iron potato," Dan said. Fuchs came through the hatch, and suddenly the bridge felt crowded to Dan. "Lars isn't tall," he said to himself, "but he fills up a room." "That is it?" Fuchs asked, his eyes riveted to the screen. "That's it," Pancho said over her shoulder. She tapped at the keyboard on her left, and a set of alphanumerics sprang up on the small screen above it. 14th asteroid discovered this year. Amanda said, "Then its official name will be 41-014 Fuchs." "How's it feel to have your name on an asteroid, Lars?" Pancho asked. "Very fine," Fuchs said. "You're the first person to have his name attached to a newly discovered asteroid in years," Amanda said. She seemed almost aglow to Dan. "Most of the new rocks have been found by the impact searchers," Pancho said. "Those little bitty probes don't get their names into the record." "Asteroid 41-014 Fuchs," Amanda breathed. He smiled and shrugged. Squirmed, almost as if embarrassed by her enthusiasm. "The official name's one thing," Dan said. "I'm calling her Bonanza." "Her?" Fuchs asked. "Asteroids are feminine," Pancho challenged. Dan held his ground. "Hey, we speak of Mother Earth, don't we? And they call Venus our sister planet, don't they?" "What about Mars?" Pancho retorted. "Or Jupiter," said Amanda. Pointing to the lump imaged on the radar screen, Dan insisted, "Bonanza's going to make us all rich and very happy. She and her sisters are going to save the world. She's a female." "Sure she's female," Pancho said laconically. "You want to dig into her, don't you?" Fuchs sputtered, and Amanda said, "Pancho, really?" Dan put on an innocent air. "What a dirty mind you have, Pancho. I admire that in a woman." Within 3 hours, they were close enough to Bonanza to see it for themselves, a dark, deformed shape glinting sullenly in the wan light of the distant sun. The asteroid blotted out the stars as it tumbled slowly end over end in the cold, empty silence of space, 1,844 meters along its long axis. Amanda was reading out the radar measurements. 762 meters at its maximum width. Nearly 2 kilometers long, Dan mused. He hadn't left the bridge all during their approach to the metallic asteroid. "Killing residual thrust," Pancho said, her attention focused on the control displays. "Throttling down to zero," Amanda confirmed. The asteroid slid out of view as the pilots established a parking orbit around it. Dan felt what little weight remaining dwindle away to nothing. He floated up off the deck, stopped himself with a hand against the overhead. He felt Fuchs come through the hatch behind him. "Lars, we're going to be in zero-G for a while," Dan said. "I know. I think I'm getting accustomed to it." "Good. Just don't make any sudden head movements, and you'll be fine." "Yes. Thank you." "My God! There it is!" The dark, lopsided bulk of Bonanza rose in front of the bridge windows like some pitted, pockmarked monster. Huge, overawing, menacing. Despite himself, Dan felt a wave of unease surge through him. "It's like confronting an ogre," he thought. "A giant beast from a fairy tale." "Look at those striations," Fuchs said, his voice vibrant with excitement. "This must have broken off from a much larger body. Perhaps a planetesimal from the early age of the solar system. We've got to get outside and take samples. Drill cores." Dan broke into laughter. Fuchs turned toward him, looking confused. Even Pancho glanced over her shoulder. "What's so funny, boss?" "Nothing," Dan said, trying to sober himself. "Nothing." Inwardly, though, He marveled that the same sight that brought back to him memories